Välkommen till Tysklandspodden, en podcast av Goethe-institutet i Sverige. Vi bjuder in spännande gäster för att prata om kultur, samhälle, idéer och mycket mer. Och här kan du lära känna helt nya sidor av Tyskland. Jag heter Sonja Leister och jobbar på Goethe-institutet med litteraturprogrammet och biblioteket. Idag ska vi prata om ett helt nytt begrepp. En helt ny identitet som uppstår i Tyskland, nämligen Ostbewusstsein. Alltså en ny medvetenhet om att vara östtysk och kanske även ett nyfunnet självförtroende som hänger ihop med det. Och denna östmedvetenhet, som man kanske kan översätta det till, har framförallt vuxit fram hos de yngre. Alltså bland de som är födda i öst efter murens fall. Och den som har beskrivit fenomenet Ostbewusstsein är journalisten och författaren Valerie Schönian. Hon har skrivit en bok med samma titel där hon går till botten med vad det innebär att vara östtysk idag. Och för boken har hon pratat med sin familj, hon har rest genom Östtyskland för att intervjua till exempel konstnärer, politiker och helt vanliga människor som engagerar sig. Valerie Schönian är född 1990, alltså bara några dagar innan återföreningen, och har vuxit upp i den östtyska staden Magdeburg. And now I will switch to English because I have Valerie right next to me here in the studio. Welcome, Valerie Schönian.
Hello.
I'm so happy to have you here. A little more presentation. You studied German and political science in Berlin, and for many years you have been working as a journalist at the Leipzig newsroom of the weekly magazine Die Zeit. So, Valerie, you describe in your book that you didn't think that much about your origins or about your identity as East German until you moved to Munich to start journalism school when you were 25 years old. What happened in Munich?
Yeah, I have to say maybe a few words more what happened before that. Because when I was raised in Magdeburg, the whole topic was not a topic at all anymore. So we just didn't talk about it in school. When it was a topic in the media, it was always a historical thing. So something, yeah, especially when you are young, where you have the feeling, okay, that has nothing to do with me. And what happened when I was 25 in Munich is that the East, the German East, was out of a sudden a topic again in the media, because at the same time there were right far wing demonstrations in Dresden. And I was in Munich also on a demonstration against that. But I had the feeling that there are some differences between me and the other Munich people. So I saw in the people there in Dresden just people who demonstrate, who are like angry. But the people around me, they saw East German people. And there were out of a sudden clichés about these kind of people, my kind of people, where I thought, okay, I just couldn't believe it. And they started this process that I call in German my Ossi-Werdung, so my becoming an Ossi, my becoming an East German girl again. And it was not only the personal level, like I said, it was also the media level and the political level that everywhere, everyone talked about it again. But it was always connected to the AfD, our right-wing party.
Alternative für Deutschland, AfD, that's a far-right party that's very successful in Germany.
So always when we talked about East Germany, we always talked about the far-right and the right extremists. And I had the feeling, okay, but I don't see myself as that, and that there is something missing, but I had no words for that. And there the whole identity process started.
That's very interesting because, as I mentioned, you were born 1990 and you say it wasn't at all a topic in your everyday life. And I'm born in the 80s in West Germany, in Wuppertal, and I would say absolutely the same. I didn't talk about the reunification or how is it to be East German, how is it to be West German at all with anybody. And I think it's interesting because I think the first time I saw myself as West German was when I started university and met people from the East, and they started to observe me and my behavior and said, oh, here the women drink so much beer. And I was like, what is here? I didn't even understand what this fellow student meant when she commented on that. And then I asked her what she meant, and she was from the East. So is that a little bit the same that happened to you then in Munich, that what people were mirroring to you was, this is East German, and you found yourself as like an object that is analyzed? Or what was your feeling then when all this happened?
I mean, what you described, I heard that from a lot of people my age, that they always, when they changed the sides of Germany, they experienced stuff like that. For me, it was a little bit different because no one really knew that I'm from East Germany, not because I didn't want to tell them, just because I didn't know that is something I have to tell. So, and because I don't have the dialect, I'm not far right. I don't have this typical cliche opinions. So they didn't put me in this direction. But what I realized, of course, is, okay, here are some differences. The buildings look different. The people are different. They have a lot of money, much more money than I was used to. But in the beginning, I didn't really understand that this has something to do with the whole West and East thing that came after a while, when the political level also influenced the whole topic. Because, you know, of course there are differences, and that's not a problem. It can be funny, you know. I already recognized differences when I moved to Berlin, because the people there from West Germany didn't know the same songs, because they didn't know the same institutions and so on. But we laughed about that, you know. They laughed about the cliché of the grey East, and I laughed about the cliché of the Bavarian people who always wear leather shorts. And it was okay, and it was funny, because there was no difference between us. But when all the political situation changed and all the clichés came up, and I started to realize, oh, they are serious about that. A lot of Western people actually think that East German people can't do democracy, that they're somehow stupid, that they're not really, they're all Nazis or so. Then it started to get a problem.
I understand. So this rise of the far right party, AfD, and all those political developments in the East put the East on the media agenda, and quite negatively. How did the West Germans look at this new phenomenon, and how did you look at it?
Yeah, for me, it was like just a demonstration that could have been in Wuppertal, for example, or in Munich, or anywhere, that people who are like afraid of refugees, or are afraid like what will happen to the country when too many refugees come, that they go on the street and demonstrate. And but I didn't connect that to East Germany and to the history in the beginning. Then, of course, I started also my research. I also started to talk to my family, started to understand that some of the developments are a little bit faster and quicker always in East Germany because of the historical situation and the differences. But from the perception of the others, it came to me that, okay, this happens in East Germany, and that is how the other people see that.
In your book, you even write that the older you get, the more East German you feel. Why is that? Or can you describe this development a little bit?
I mean, identity is something that always develops when you talk about it, right? So when you think about it with others, not because it's not real before that, because it's of course real, because identity is connected to power issues. But of course it gets more a part of your life when you talk about it and think about it. And I mean, so I had a lot of conversations about it. And in these conversations, I realized how many things in my life are connected to the history of East Germany.
For example,
that my mother, my aunt, and all the women in my family always worked. Mm-hmm. And that is for me so completely normal that I always also do that. Then the thing that I don't have no wealth. My whole family has no wealth. My family is not able to give me any money. What is so completely normal for the friends that I got to know in Munich. And that, for example, when you don't have the safety of the wealth of your family, that influences, of course, your whole life. It influences what job you do, where you live, where you travel, how you think about in life, and also how the political situations influence you, how scared you are of all the crises we have right now. And yeah, I could give a lot of examples, but the thing is, so many people always ask me, what do you have to do with East Germany? Because mm-hmm. we are born like 1990.
Yeah, you're not connected to the GDR, but yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm saying, yeah, but the East didn't stop to exist with the GDR. It is a different part of Germany, another room with other experiences and other social structures. And it is like that because of the GDR, but it's, yeah, something on its own now.
Sometimes I wondered when reading the book, is it helpful to talk about the differences between East and West German identity so much? Because you could maybe argue that there is a risk just to reinforce old ideas or prejudice.
Yeah, that's a very good question. I also ask myself that a lot. And thought about it a lot, but I always come to the conclusion that, I mean, the differences are there. And I think it's never a good idea to just not talk about stuff because we are scared of what happens with that from what the wrong side will do with it. So we have to deal with it. And I think the only chance is to talk about it, but on the same time, always also say, okay, but the differences are nothing bad, that they can be enrichment, that
yeah,
they can be
coexisting, maybe.
Coexisting, and more than that, even something where you can learn from each other something, you know?
Yeah, of course. You can also put a positive frame around it. Like, yeah. We're different, so what do we now together with this in a constructive way?
Yeah.
And just a quick remark to everybody listening to this podcast. We have a library here at the Goethe Institute in Stockholm. So if you live in Stockholm or nearby, you can come and borrow, for example, Valerie Schönjan's book Ostbewusstsein. You find the opening hours on our website and you can get a library card for free. I think we need to talk a little bit about wording also, because maybe not all Swedish listeners are into those words. Because you write a bit about the term Ossi in your book, and I have heard you using it. And I try to explain a little bit. It's an expression that is colloquial and quite negatively connotated for Ostdeutscher eller Ostdeutsche. So we have the Ossis, the East Germans, and we have also the Wessis, the West Germans, that would then be. And yeah, both terms are sort of loaded with prejudice. Would you say that you are trying to reclaim this word Ossi when you use it now for yourself?
Yeah, definitely. Because I thought, okay, when all the people are still talking about Ossi, then I am also an Ossi. With this, I wanted to say, okay, if you all talk about the Ossis, and if you all see the Ossis, and you connect it with all the bad cliches you have, then I want to stand here and say, okay, but look, I am also an Ossi. And yeah, reclaim it, like you said.
Yeah, are you using it with pride?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I wouldn't say that my identity is identity is connected with pride. That's just some a word that I don't use for it. My identity that I'm East German is just a normal part of myself. But I would say the wording part you said, the Aussie thing, mm-hmm. that is a pride thing because it's a nevertheless. You know,
you want to use it and yeah. you fill it with something.
A trotzdem, you say in German. Yeah,
I do it nevertheless.
Yeah,
it's a bit like people are reclaiming the word black or fat or something like that.
I think
it's about the same idea because I couldn't reclaim the word Vessi and use it proudly. I think people would just think I'm a horrible... yeah, you're laughing. Exactly. Because when you're somehow part of a majority or the rich part of a country, it's just very douchey to say I'm a proud Vessi. I don't think that sounds... that doesn't sound good. You have already alluded to it when you said, how has being East German shaped you? Because there are still a lot of differences between West and East Germany. And that is not just blunt prejudice, but this is socioeconomic facts. For example, income is still lower in East Germany. There are very few Germans in leading positions in academia, in politics. There are hardly any CEOs or managers from the East. There's not a single East German company in the German stock index DAX. All those things, how do you think they affect the self-perception of the East Germans?
Yeah, it's a lot because the people, of course, recognize that they're not stupid, you know? They recognize, okay, that where they work, all the people in the executive levels are West German. They recognize, for example, we had the holiday where we celebrated 35 years of reunification.
Mm-hmm.
And on all the pictures with our government were only West German people. It's such a big symbol for something, for what is wrong. And now the people are like angry. They're angry and they read in books like mine and a lot of other very great books, read that they are at some points maybe right, you know, that they're... that not everything was so great
after in the whole reunification.
Yeah, in the whole process. Mm. And of course, that makes them more angry. And then also to see that it, although the facts you just said, that they don't really change. I think what changed is the awareness in the last years,
mm-hmm.
but the facts, the hard facts, like who sits in the executive levels and who has all the power, that didn't change so much, actually.
Yeah, the structures are still there. But yeah as you say, Ostbewusstsein means awareness. Maybe that is first developing in the East and then, I would say, hopefully spilling over to the West. But I mean, it's a process. And
I mean, like you said, Ostbewusstsein... it means awareness, but in Germany, confidence means Selbstbewusstsein. Mm. So that is also something that is in it, you know? And I think it's both. I want to have an awareness, and it means awareness, but it also means the self-confidence that East German people got in the last years.
When I read your book, I was starting to think about Sweden, of course. How does this translate to Sweden? And there are regions in Sweden that feel very much left behind and disregarded by politicians, for example. And that would be, let's say, the north of Sweden. And I wondered, is your book really about East and West Germany? Or are you telling a more universal story about differences between economically strong and economically weak regions?
To be honest, I think my book is, of course, about East and West Germany. But what I also write in the book is that the awareness that I hope that these East awareness just helps other awarenesses too. Like for all the stories and all you don't see, for example, also in Germany, for the queer people, the black people, the poor people, and of course you can think that
people
more.
On living on the countryside, maybe.
Yeah, countryside, yeah, of course, yeah, you're completely right. And then of course you can think that even bigger, like you said, but because we have all these developments everywhere, like in Sweden, like you said, in France, yeah, it's a global thing. And it's also the problem what I said before, that the people are so afraid of differences. And it sounds so banal to say that, like, oh yeah, okay, we have to love the differences more. But I mean, that is like such a big thing. If we could really get that in our head, that differences are something where we can learn something from each other, yeah, would be very helpful.
Ostbewusstsein focuses on your generation, so the so-called Nachwende Kinder, meaning those who were born after the wall came down, and those who never experienced life in the GDR, at least not as adults. And I saw that another author published a book in September 25, a memoir by the YouTuber and author Alexander Prinz called Oststolz, and that would then be Eastern Pride or East Pride. Is this a trend? Is there a newfound confidence among the young East Germans?
I think there is already since a few years. So since 5, 6, 7 years, there are like podcasts, books, documentaries, movies from this generation. And I think, yeah, it comes from the feeling that I described, from the feeling you want to look for the part that is missing in the big conversation.
And what part is that? What does your generation want to add to the conversation?
So, for example, when we look on the GDR, that there was not only the dictatorship and the resistance, that there was something in between, and that when you look at in the time right now, that there's not only the AfD and the far right and the resistance, that there's also something in between, and that there are always a lot of things happen at the same time. So yeah, we have all the problems, and believe me, I think the whole time about how we can, yeah, how we do, what we do with them. But on the other hand, there are so many people who just have a very great life in East Germany. Of course, I had a very great life, and there are a lot of they feel free, they feel great there, and they do such a great work to do something against all the developments and to, yeah, so just celebrate their life, because that's also so important. And I think that is what the people want, my generation want other people to see.
Yeah, you want to paint a much more diverse and colorful picture of what is more going on, besides from those negative media reports about, for example, AfD rising and so on, unemployment and so forth. I get it. You also talk a lot about that your generation, this young generation, is quote unquote fighting for the East. What would you say is the goal of this fight?
I would say that East Germany and the perspective and the experiences and the life are like just a normal part of Germany, not like the other thing, the other country, the other Germany that we talk about when the holidays of the reunification and the fall of the Berlin Wall are, and after the elections. But that is the part who's like on the radar of the people also besides that. You know, that when just when the government makes some decisions, that they also, when it's not election time, look to East Germany and check how it affects the people there and the cities and the countryside.
Yeah, you want to be considered in every like political decision, and not only be this annoying part.
the bad part, the other part, just normal part, you know?
You have talked to so many people. You have been thinking about this topic for such a long time. I wonder, what is your ideal goal? How should Germany look like in, let's say, 2040?
East Germany will never be the same like West Germany. We on the economical level, for example, we won't get this very big companies that West Germany have. That won't happen in the next 10 years. But what I hope is that the political level recognize all that. We have a lot, very often the problem that the politicians try to do something good, but then when you look at the decision, you see that they really don't have the awareness what is really going on, because and they don't see how often bad it affects East Germany. And I hope that this will change, you know, that the East German people will also be represented in all the executive levels in the political and media world and economical world, so that they can decide with the others what's best.
I know that you're very enthusiastic and very engaged in this topic, and I wonder if you can spread a little bit of your own enthusiasm to people listening to this podcast. What would you say, just from your personal perspective, what is today the best thing with East Germany?
East Germany is not finished, you know. When you go there and you live there and you talk to people, then you feel everywhere that things are changing and moving, and that the people are thinking about how they can make it better. You know, this people are everywhere. They're not really always in the articles and in the TV shows, but they are there, and they fight for East Germany, you know, and they fight for Germany and for freedom and peace and all the very important blah blah things. And it's also just fun to be there, because if something is not finished, you know, everything is moving, everything is changing all the time. And that also does something with yourself. You feel alive when you're there. I feel alive, you know. I know so many people who live in East Germany who would never go to West Germany because they don't like that everything is so closed up already, that everything is already where it should be, and that they're supposed to be all the answers, but they are still looking for them, and they know they are looking for them, and that is why I think they are closer to the answer or to finding them.
Does this attract also a lot of culture, I wonder, or artists? I think those kinds of surroundings maybe could be a good environment for people who want to think something new.
Yeah, because there's a it is, because they're also, it's just the space is there, you know? And it's cheaper than in West Germany. So you have the possibility as an artist to come there, to rent a big place and to just concentrate on your art and to make exhibitions and everything very on a low level.
On a low budget, maybe.
Low budget also. And yeah, that's great.
Yeah, maybe we have inspired some people. So what's then the best city to go to, or the town?
Magdeburg, of course. No.
Okay.
No, but yeah, I mean, it's so interesting because about Berlin, the people always said, yeah, it's very poor, but it's sexy. And I mean, that is actually the thing about East Germany, or especially the cities with a university right now. Because it's poor, and okay, we have, of course, all of these problems we talked about, but it's sexy in the way that you can do a lot, and that it's very easy to do something because it's not already there, you know? The competition is not so big. And yeah, I always say, because in Germany you say that Leipzig, it's a very good city too. Leipzig is in New Berlin, and then I'd say, then is Magdeburg the new Leipzig?
This sounds logical to me. Okay, then we just say Magdeburg is the place to be.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Valerie Schönian. You're a journalist and author of the book Ostbewusstsein. Thank you so much for coming here.
Thank you.
Om du gillar den här podden, så kan du följa Tysklandspodden i din app så att du inte missar nästa avsnitt. Jag heter Sonja Leister. Tack för idag. Tysklandspodden är en podcast av Goethe-institutet i Sverige. Redaktion och produktion Ylva Ratjen, Judith Mörsberger och Sonja Leister.